Excited to welcome Alicia Komacki to the Basketball Podcast. Komacki is set to enter her 14th season as head coach of the Sierra Canyon girls basketball team in 2025-26, where she has established one of the nation's most dominant high school programs. Her tenure is highlighted by leading her teams to 5 California state championships and securing an ESPN national championship in 2023, finishing the season ranked number one in the country. Coach Komacki boasts an overall career record of over 350 wins at Sierra Canyon, maintaining an exceptional win percentage above 85% over 13 years. Her success has garnered national recognition and numerous accolades. In 2022, Komacki was named the WBCA Pat Summit National Coach of the Year, and she was a finalist for the Naismith National Coach of the Year in 2023. Other honors include the LA Times Coach of the Year and Cal High Sports Coach of the Year in 2019. Her standing among elite coaches is further recognized by USA Basketball, where she made her bench coaching debut as an assistant at the 2025 Nike Hoop Summit, and previously served as a court coach for USA Basketball Women's Under 16 National Team Trials. Komacki has helped mentor and develop numerous college basketball players and professional players, including, most notably, Juju Watkins, a USC Trojan, Kennedy Burke, current WNBA player, and current roster standout, Jersey Robinson. Hey coach, a brief time out from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. Do you really know which plays, sets, and actions are working for your team? On offense, how valuable are paint touches and post entries? On defense, do you get more stops playing man or zone? Like high-level college and pro teams, you can use an analytics system like Hoopsalytics to get data-driven answers to help guide your in-game strategy and practice emphasis. With Hoopsalytics, you can track any action or set and see the resulting points per possession. Plus the video link stats, you can view your successes and fails and see if it's a play design or execution issue. And you can easily build organized film sessions from these video clips. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball today. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your game for free. Alicia, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm amazing. So excited to have you on. Obviously, we talk a lot separately, so now we get to share this conversation with the world. And man, all your incredible success at Sierra Canyon, and I've seen it firsthand. Tremendous program. And where do we begin? How about sustaining success, coach? What are some of the things that have led to sustaining success over your time at Sierra Canyon?
Really good basketball players. Yeah, people try to ask the secret sauce, and I don't know if I really have any secret sauce, but I think the one consistency is that we have good players and kids that buy in, great support from my administration and great parents and great families. And those are people that I want to play for me and be a part of my program is good people. And I think you can do a lot when you have good people. That's a big part of it. Obviously, there's been a lot of intentionality with the things we do and the way we do it and the why behind why we do it. And it seems like it's been working. So we'll just keep doing what we've been doing.
Let me add an insight here. How about confidence balanced with humility? That to me is a great descriptor of how you approach things. I can always tell the confidence that exists. You've done the work. You understand who you are. You understand your program. And yet your answer there just reflects great humility. And that's who you are.
Since you just said I'm humble, I can't really talk on that anymore now, can I?
You can absolutely talk on that because, again, produced National Players of the Year, WNBA players, successful college players, obviously state championships. Let's get beyond that. You're incredibly successful. But yeah. Balancing that with humility is the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that is who I am, Chris. That's how I was raised. And I think that is a big part of how I want to impact these young ladies that I coach and the lives that come into mine. My philosophy behind coaching is better people make better basketball players. And so I'm constantly just trying to put into these kids, be as much of a role model as I can and try to do things the right way, which is the right way in my mind is different than the right way in other people's mind, and just kind of mold them and guide them and sculpt them into just little mini good humans, I think is the number one goal. And I think, again, when better people are playing basketball, then usually we're going to be great teammates and we're going to have good teams and do things the right way, both on and off the court. So it is a big part of who we are, our program, and confidence and humility are words that we try to put into these kids every day.
I've been impressed with many things, but since you brought that up, better people make better basketball players. That was the first time I heard that from you was at the parent meeting. And first of all, I love the parent meeting because direct, honest, to the point, to me, that's always been the best way to communicate. And you reflected that in the meeting. And then you can talk about that. But the other thing that you said there is that I communicate with my players. So talk to us about that philosophy.
Yeah, one of the things, honestly, is I used to be not big on a parent meeting, but I think it's important, obviously, that parents receive communication, especially when you're new to a program or new to high school basketball, right? There's a lot of questions. You can get lost. There is a lot of new environment for both the kids and the family. So I think it is important to communicate in that regard. And then I just got comfortable the last few years. We haven't needed to have a parent meeting. We've added one or two new families every year. And part of our culture, even with our kids, it's the same with the parents. Like they pass down the information so that parents don't really have to ask me questions. There's veteran parents in the culture that can answer those questions for them. But this year, I thought it was important. We have six new families on a roster of 13. I just thought it was important to let them know really who I am and why you should trust me coaching your kid and trust my coaching staff and give them some information. So, in that parent meeting, like you said, short to the point, just trying to give them really knowledge and information and then answer any questions for them. But a big thing for me is I coach at this age for a reason. I think it's incredibly impactful, the age of 13 to 18 to 19 that I have these kids, and I want to work with the kids. And I see these kids almost sometimes more than their parents do. I'm with them more sometimes than I'm with my own husband, right? We spend a lot of time together, and our communication has to be A plus. And I think if their parents are communicating for them, one, they're not learning, they're not growing. Those are two big pillars in our program. And if they can't communicate with me, whether that's from fear or from just lack of being able to do it, experience, right, or knowledge, then we're not going to have a great relationship and we need to have as best of a relationship as we can. So I communicate with my kids. Some people find that fascinating. We go on a trip out of state internationally this year, right? We went to Canada and the kids get the itinerary. And if they share it with their parents, great. But if they don't, I don't get any questions about it, right? So that's our goal is to communicate with the kids as much as we can.
I love it. I value it. I totally agree with that from my daughter's perspective. And some of the other thing, when I say meeting, I don't want any coaches to think this was like a very formal thing. This was after a fall league game and it was just perfect. Because again, keep meetings short. We parents, coaches, we don't want to be in meetings. But another thing that you said that really stood out was don't compare your kid to others. And again, imagining at your level with the quality of players you have, that's something to handle right away.
Yeah, a lot of times that's a question. I have very few parent meetings. And so one of my rules is you're welcome to talk to me anytime. I don't have the 24-hour rule, even. It's always a great idea, but it's not a rule of mine. So you can talk to me anytime, but your daughter has to be there. And I've found that in 14 years of coaching at Sierra Canyon and being a head coach, I've had five parent meetings. I could literally count them on one hand. And most of them were positive. Most of them were, they wanted to get on the same page with the kid in the room and what are you telling her versus what am I telling them at home? Sometimes it was a coach of a kid and they wanted to say, hey, I'm watching film at home, but I know we have to have this meeting with my kid here. So I'm showing them film. I want to make sure we're on the same page. So usually good, positive meetings. But in those meetings, sometimes other kids get brought up, right? And that's never the goal. Let's talk about your kid. Let's talk about the reason you're here. Let's talk about the positives or the negatives of why you want to have this conversation. And let's just not bring up other kids because there's no point. You don't know what that kid does on a daily basis. Nobody's sitting in my gym every day except for me and my coaching staff and the kids that are there. We don't need to even bring another kid's name out of your mouth for any reason because you don't know them. You what on the on a game base thing, whether that's fall league or obviously going into the regular season, you can't judge another kid based on that 15 minutes that you might see them play basketball. Definitely one of our rules in a parent meeting if we have those.
I love it. And so many of these things inform coaches. I think they're a little bit unique perspectives, and I love that as well. And one of the other things that you do is you give your players a history lesson of the program, which I absolutely love. And take us through that.
Again, I think it's just really important to know who came before you, the jersey that you're wearing. We're talking this year a lot about ownership and membership. And so we talked about you have a membership at Sierra Canyon. There's some form of a buy-in here. You don't get to just get the jersey and you get to be on the team and you're part of history here. And so I think it's important to know again who came before them, what's been the success of the program, what's been the challenges of this program. We didn't just start as the most successful program around. There's been a lot of work and there's been a lot of people before them that put in that work. And so you don't get just handed this jersey, you don't get handed this privilege. It truly is an honor and a privilege to attend school here and then to be a student athlete as well. So yeah, the history lesson's quick. We just go through every year. We go through the theme of the year. That's always very intentional. And so why was that the theme that year? And then we go through the success or the non-success that we had that year. And again, I just think it's important, especially for newcomers, to just know we didn't just start this yesterday, right? And I think sometimes, especially in whatever age we're in, like the years before was Kennedy Burke, who's now playing for the Liberty and won a WNBA championship. And so the kids who came after her, they knew Kennedy. The kids now, they don't know who Kennedy is, but we're fortunate she comes back and visits, so they do. And right now we're in the Juju stage, right? So these kids are going to know who Juju is, and they're going to know that she played at Sierra Canyon, but know the challenges that came with her years here, and that she didn't win everything, and how that story got built and how her legacy got cemented because of those challenges, as well as the successes. It's great when they know a couple of players. It's great when they know the championships we've won or the championships we've lost. But I just think it's important that they truly understand who put in the work behind them and why they get to wear the jersey that they find a lot of pride in.
Talk to us a little bit deeper about that player connection to past players in that sense, because clearly that's an attractor. Clearly that's cool. That's all that. But it's also like your ability to be able to give them perspective on the fact that their development and their success was not linear. There was this non-linear development process. And that's such a big cornerstone of successful programs like yours.
Hopefully I'm answering your question correctly as I heard it, but feel free to put me back on track. But I think something great about a coach being somewhere for a long time, which is again my 14th year at Sierra Canyon, is I'm the linear part, right? I'm the continual piece. And so kids want to come back and see me. I just got a text message from my kids who graduated in 2014, and two of them said, "Hey, coach, we're going to come by as soon as we can and come see you and come take a look at the team." And so all of that stuff's great. It's great for me, obviously. I truly believe in the word family. It's something that's on the walls in our locker room and in the walls of my office. And a lot of people say that, a lot of programs, sports throughout the country say family on three, family on six, but it's something that has always been really true to me and something I believe in. And so when I get these players to come back and speak to the program or just watch and see the growth and the development and also take ownership for what they've brought to us, right? And that they were the ones who started this back in 2012. It's fun, and it's fun for the current kids, and it's fun for the former kids. One of my favorite practices is Christmas Eve, as long as we can do it on Christmas Eve, because sometimes it falls on a day where we can't do that. But Christmas Eve is a fun practice. It's a lighthearted alumni come back. We do gifts and we do fun things and contests, and it's really just a time for everybody to just be a part of family again and see kids who have been here back in 2012 or 2018 or 2020, and then the team that we have now. So that's always a special day for me and an exciting day for our program.
No, I love that. And let's finish the five ships before our championship, because you mentioned two of them. So leadership, ownership, membership, worship, craftsmanship. So maybe just quickly talk about those.
Oh man, I'm big on, so to rewind a little bit, I'm big on the players deciding things for themselves, right? And I think, so that particular exercise, I have essentials and expectations. And so expectations are the things that all coaches have, whether you use the word standards, a lot of people like that. So I like to go on same letters. So essentials and expectations. Expectations are my things. Those are the things I expect from our program. Those are the things I shouldn't have to teach anymore. Those are the things I shouldn't have to coach anymore. Our girls should know what they are. And they raise to the level of expectations for both me, myself, and then for our program. And then essentials are what I describe to them as essential for this team this year to have success. And ultimately, we have to define success sometimes. And so they come up with these things. This particular year, we gave it a theme, but it was something that I took off of Twitter. I don't even know how many years ago. I have a little file I save things to. So this was taken from Oklahoma men's basketball, and they had just posted a little graphic is all it was, and it was 10 ships before a championship. And so I decided we'll go with five. 10 is a little much. And so we put the kids into different groups, and they had to collaborate and talk and think and discuss words that had a ship in it. And so the goal was five ships before a championship. And they came up with the five that you mentioned. They came up with more than five. They came up with about 10 to 12. And we voted on the five that we thought were essential for our program this year. And then again, that's hard, right? Because it had to have the word ship in it. So then we had to really describe why is this particular word, how can we mold it and bend it to make it make sense for it being an essential for our program. I didn't want them to just select a random word. That was the process of how we went about those. And their reasonings were all different and fun and great, but ultimately they came up with kind of the purposes behind those five words. And one of the ones that I really loved was membership. And it was the idea of let's be grateful for the people who have come before us and that it is a privilege and an honor to be here. But we also, so it's not just like you get your buy-in, like a gym membership, like we are all here, we've gotten the membership, but you have to earn it every day. Right. And then use it. So one of the kids brought up the idea of you have a gym membership, but you don't use it. And I raised my hand. I said, yeah, I have a gym membership I pay for monthly and I don't go every single day. And so there was a thought behind that as well of you do have a membership here. You're all signed up, but earn it every day, value it, make the most of it. Right. So lots of just fun conversations came from that particular exercise. And then I created a graphic and sent it out, and hopefully it's on the back of my computer. It's on my backdrop. So hopefully they remember those things. But yeah, it was a good exercise for sure.
I love that they came up with 10. That's impressive. And talk to us maybe quickly, the ones that a listener might not know as much what they mean, warship and craftsmanship.
So it is WAR because WOR, warship, was actually one of the possibilities of a word. Originally came up with the idea of battleship. That was the word that actually got presented. And of course, a little self-explanatory in terms of we're going to battle every day. We've been talking a lot this year about adversity and resilience and those types of words. And so battleship got brought up. And then somebody said, you know what? Like, war is way better. We're not just going to go to battle. Like, we're going to war this year. And so the idea behind the warship was just stay together through the course of ups and downs. And that could be successes and challenges, right? That we want to stick together because sometimes on a great team and a great program with great players, some people might have individual success. We might have team success, and somebody could still be upset, right? Somebody's still upset about maybe their stats or they didn't get playing time. So the idea of worship was we're going to go through all of this together, whether it's good or bad, and really just the idea of sticking together and staying together. And I think the other word we thought of was craftsmanship, right? And the idea behind that as well. And that's how we craft our culture. And the idea that, again, this is ownership for this year's team and an essential for this year's team. And last year, we spent a lot of extra focus on culture, wanted to get it back to where I wanted it to be. And so the returners have a lot of experience with that coming into this year. And so the idea with craftsmanship is just a little bit more of this is your guys' team now. You know what you're doing, but there are a lot of new people. So let's make sure everybody fully understands what it takes culture-wise to be a part of Sierra Canyon Girls Basketball and that you also get to craft part of that as well. It's not just this is what gets told to you, this is what's dictated to you. You guys decide a lot of those things yourselves as well.
So this may or may not surprise you. I get asked a lot about you. When I travel, there's a lot of curiosity about behind your success and your program. And I've had to come up with answers, obviously, to be able to share a little bit what you do and how you do it so well. And one of the things that I share constantly is the quality of the language that you use. It stands out all the time. And it stands out for my daughter. And it stands out for, I think, everyone around your program. And part of that is, and you can talk about that, but part of it is you come up with your own unique language. And that seems to be like a pet project of yours, like calling closeouts, what you call your closeouts in terms of the decisions and different things like that. I think earth, wind, fire. I think you have some different things like that. So it's really cool. And talk to us a little bit about that process, because clearly you spent a lot of time on language.
Yeah, for sure. I think to be honest, this came probably from a COVID project, right? A lot of us had COVID projects and a lot of wisdom comes from boredom. And so at that time, I always give my coaches like a project of the year. But at that time, obviously, things were different and lots of learning and stuff going on at that time. And so I dove my project that off season was diving into the idea of language for teams, right? And I was doing a lot of podcasts and I was doing presentations online and different things. And so in that research, I did a little small study with professional players. Everybody was a player, professional players, collegiate players, high school players, and then even youth players. And it was a short little survey type of a thing and asked about pros and cons, really about coaching, about their coaching staffs. And one of the biggest cons was that their coaching staffs aren't on the same language. And so let's just say, for example, when you blitz a screen, somebody called it blitz, somebody called it trap, somebody called it a color, somebody called it something totally random that they had never heard of. And the coaches were using all their own language of what they knew and learned, and it was just confusing players, right? So that was one of the feedbacks I got. And it just, a light bulb went off in my head. If, like, I'm pretty sure my coaching staff isn't doing that. But if we are, let's have a universal language. So we called it Sierra slang. Again, I like the letters to be the same there. So we call it Sierra slang. And then one of my coaches later took that project was to put all of our Sierra slang and literally make it look like a dictionary and define it and printed what we call a blue book and put it in there. And so the idea behind Sierra slang originated for multiple reasons. One was to just make sure we eliminated player confusion, get my coaching staff on the same page with the language we are presenting to our team and teaching moments. And then there was also an idea, again, with my studies and different people I had talked to, of there's a really big sense of ownership and a pride when your team has a different language than maybe what somebody else refers to something as, right? It just feels more special. It feels like there's more ownership behind it. And so there was intentionality behind that as well. And then when it got put in, it just seemed like it worked. And so the more we can use Sierra slang and create something, we literally just thought of something the other day and this was new. So we've always taught how to tag in our trapping a ball screen, how to tag in the people behind it, but just the other day, I was like, we need to give that a name. We need to make it Sierra slang. And so we have the trap, and then we have the Trinity or the three people behind them. And we just thought that makes sense. We can call, let's stop calling these people you three. Let's give them a name. So we called them the Trinity and the trap. And so just little things like that, I think the visualization sticks in kids' minds. And so again, in this research and in this project I did, a lot of it went into learning and things, especially with this generation and emojis and imagery and how that can help them learn better. And so Sierra slang was born. And there's a lot of different, like, little nuances within it, but ultimately, that was what happened.
Give us some more examples of Sierra slang.
Sure.
What are
So
some of your
you brought
favorites?
up our closeouts. And so I know a lot of people are creative in their closeouts and have heard a bigger trend at that time. Again, going back to the 2020 time, was a lot of people were calling people NBA player names, WNBA player names, people were familiar with. And I thought the biggest problem for me with that is, what if I have a kid who doesn't watch professional basketball and they have no idea, which sadly is the case, right? And they have no idea who this person is. If I tell you to close out as if you're guarding Asia Wilson, but you have no idea what she does, maybe you know who Asia Wilson is, but you don't know how she plays, that's not really going to help us. So again, the idea of emojis entered my mind, and that got translated easily to our scouting report was the bigger idea behind it. And so we originally started with personnel. And so there was a rock, earth, fire, wind, and I think we even had water back then. And that was really directed to player personnel. So a rock was a post player who literally just stayed at the block. They were a true 1980s post player that was just gonna stay block to block and give you great post moves. And so that was their personnel. And it translated eventually into, let's make these our closeouts, which has also adapted as we've moved on year to year. And so now we really have three closeouts. We have a fire, who we also call a fire shooter. And that's not, we don't want to run them off the line, but it's really more so that's how we would guard and help side. And then we would close out. It would give us a shorter closeout on a really good shooter based on the help that we are in. But it's knowing that they're a fire and knowing that this person can shoot from 30 feet and they can get hot and we have to eliminate that part from their game. And then we have Earth as an all-around scorer, and they can hurt us in all the ways that, again, going back, that it was earth, wind, fire. They can do all of it. And so this is somebody that we have to really guard with a hand up and keep a hand up, but they can go by us three levels. They can pull up mid-range. They can score from three as well. And then we have wind, and wind is somebody they're going to blow right by you. So you can give them a short closeout because we'll give them a three. but they're probably going to put the ball on the floor and go by you. So again, the visualization of teaching the kids that sticks in their mind a little bit better. And then we literally put those emojis on scouting reports to, again, just make them understand a little bit better. So it's part personnel, and then it's part how we close out on somebody as well.
I love it. And it does connect definitely with players to be able to have their own unique language. I love that.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know, the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com. Contact page or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Talk to us about pyramid of purpose as well.
Yeah, pyramid of purpose. And again, the reason that having your kid on the team, and that went into that day of kind of the history lesson. And I said, I'm going to go through this really quickly for you girls, but I think it's really important that you know who you play for and why this is my purpose and why this is what I love to do and why I'm coaching you and why I'm invested in this. And I go through it quick because it's just to not bore them, but give them a little bit of knowledge and information. And I got my master's degree in coaching athletic administration. And one of those courses, of course, if you're getting a degree in master in coaching athletic administration, you're doing a lot of papers and stuff on, of course, your coaching and philosophy and things behind that. So this was an assignment, and it wasn't to create a pyramid, but it was to basically do your coaching philosophy. And so I decided to be a little creative with it. And so, of course, anything that's pyramid related is related to John Wooden. So give him credit for that. But mine was obviously arranged a little bit differently. But the idea would be that just like his, there's cornerstones, and then you work your way up to the top. And again, I like letters, so I went with five P's. And so I have them labeled for the five levels. And so they're five P's. And then at the top is my purpose and what I ultimately want to get from coaching these kids. And so just some words and some things that are on there. The original words have changed a little bit because I did this before I was even really, before I was a head coach, to be honest. I was an assistant coach. So this was over 20 years ago when I went through this program and did this. So some things have changed a little bit just in terms of the words that are important to me. But the ideology behind it and the philosophy behind it are all still the same. But some words that are on there is develop and grow and improve. That's something I want to get from my players. And you should be different from when you leave, from when you first got here. And again, a big part of why I love coaching this age group is they're very moldable and impressionable in great ways from 13 to 18 years old. And if I could have a great positive impact on their life in some of their most formidable years, I think that's a special role for me to play. And so again, a lot of it's intentional, just my ideas behind who did I want to be as a coach. And I think what's cool about that is when I do share it, I shared it a couple weeks ago with the team. It's wow, a lot of this has stayed the same, which is really cool because I did do this when I was 25-ish years old and not a head coach. And so I think it's pretty cool that not a lot of that pyramid of purpose has changed behind who I am and why I coach and what I want to get from my, what I want my players to get from the experience of playing for me.
Probably the names are need to be updated as well, but you've talked about this on other podcasts, playing for old school coaches and trying to become a modern coach and the challenges of that process. So I know there's so many coaches that are dealing with that and adapting to the modern game and the modern athlete and the modern person. So maybe take us through that process a little bit, because I think it helps us understand even deeper the culture that you create within your program.
Yeah, a big word I always mention is authenticity. I think that's very important. I think old school coaches do still exist, of course, and people that are my age do still coach in an old school way, right? Because that's what they know, that's what they're comfortable with. So my biggest thing is as long as you are authentic in who you are and what you're doing and the why behind it, then be who you are and do what you do. But I think that there needs to be a level for sure of wisdom and knowledge and understanding with growing and being okay to grow with how the game is growing, with how you grow as a person. Again, I'm very different at age 40 than I was when I first started coaching at 18. And there's been a lot of ebbs and flows in between there and a lot of changes. and a lot of growth, right? And I think it's important to step off of the court of who I am as a coach and, first of all, find out who I am as a person and how much can I be the same as a person on the court as I am off the court. Because I do understand that sometimes there has to be a little bit of a difference, right? My level of intensity as a coach is very different than my level of intensity as a human being and as a wife, right? And so just there are some differences, but really know who you are, but also be very willing to grow, not change, but grow. And so for me personally, it's just been constant seeking knowledge. It's a big staple of who I am as a person. I want to learn, I want to grow, I want to get better. And I really want to be there for my players in the same way now as I was 20 years ago. And they are different people. So I can't do things the same way that I did it 20 years ago. And I can't just sit in the way the game is now as it was 20 years ago. So just knowledge is the number one thing, authenticity, knowledge, and truth.
You've coached some incredibly talented female basketball players, and maybe take us through that. What are some things you've learned from coaching them that has, again, made you a better coach, but also challenged you in really good ways to be able to grow?
Yeah, one thing that stuck out when you said that, Chris, is I learned from every player, which I think is really important. A kid who might never play college basketball, a kid who might never play on my own team, who might not get minutes, right, from year to year. I learn maybe more from those kids than I do the elite superstars of the world, right? But definitely learn from all of them in so many different ways. I will say they all make me a better coach, and that's important because I think if you're not trying to become a better coach from your players, something's off. You can't just be a better coach because you listen to other coaches or because you listen to podcasts and you read books. You have to learn from your players, and I think they're the ones who are ultimately going to make you a better coach. And so I take notes year after year, lessons learned, weird things, small things, big things. And I haven't looked at that notebook in a long time. I should have done it. Had I known this was a question, I would have pulled it out and taken a look at it because there used to be really small things. I do remember one was if a kid invites you somewhere, try to show up. And so that kind of became something that was important to me. Something big or small, their 16th birthday. I was like, why am I being invited to their 16th birthday when the whole school's being invited? But I got invited, so maybe I should try to show up. I got invited to a prom pre-party. Why? Like, why did I get invited to the prom pre-party? But I should probably try to go show up, take a picture. So again, big things, small things, not just graduation parties and the big moments for them. But if I got invited, there must have been a reason that they wanted me to be there. So I should try to go to those things. I remember writing that down years ago. And so going back to the initial question of things that I've learned, it's never ends. I learn things on a daily basis from my group of players and even from not my players, just being on campus, being around other athletes, being around other students. Sometimes I'll just pull out a little notebook and jot something down. But I think a question I get asked a lot, and so I don't know if this was your intention behind that question, but what separates those elite kids? And so what have I learned from watching those elite kids every single day, particularly at practice? And the answer I give, because I've had time to reflect on it, is their competitiveness. The Jujus of the world, the Kennedys of the world, the Jerseys of the world, like they don't take a day off. They don't turn it off. And it was funny. We were looking at, I have all my drills recorded for our players, and we can talk about that as well. But I was watching a clip of a drill we were putting into practice, and I said, let me see what this looks like because I want to make sure they're watching the proper thing. And I watch it, and it's Juju just being an athlete. She's just crazy, like guarding nine people, but she did it so wrong. And I was like, this shouldn't be the example clip of how to do this particular drill. I should probably go back and redefine this because they're not her and they can't do it the way she did it. And again, it's wrong, but it was right. And she just never took a drill off. She never took a second off. She never took anything off. And it's just a high level of intensity and a high level of wanting to be the best all the time. And that's rare because, again, I haven't had a lot of those kids. I had a lot of great basketball players, but the elite, that's what separates them.
Sounds easy when you say it, just be that, right? But obviously, there's so much to that. And obviously, the incredible skill that goes with it, or athleticism, or different things like that, that reflect it. And you brought it up a little bit to the way that you send film to your players. I know my daughter was watching the other day on the couch as we're watching some NBA preseason and kept wanting to show me clips because, again, she thinks it's the coolest thing ever because it's essentially, again, just like a college program, I would tell her, or just like any program nowadays, but the way that you do that, can you help coaches understand the philosophy?
Yeah, so I took this line from Kevin Eastman. I think he is brilliant. And it was the idea of clarity before accountability. And that it just hit me so hard. I've repeated this to so many people so many times since then. I heard him say this probably back in 2020. And so the idea of clarity before accountability, that we can't hold these kids accountable to things that aren't clear for them. And I had an expectation that they know every drill, that they do it right, that they do it the way that they're been shown to do it with our philosophies and things behind it, that they go hard, that they give the effort, but that they know the drills, right? And then I said, how can they know the drills? Well, how does a brand new kid to our program know the drill unless they come in and I show them on a whiteboard? And I said, so again, this was years ago. And so I said, I have to record every practice and clip and then have a drill database. And I had already had that as part of my practice planner, but it was upgrading it and making it accessible for them. We have a lot of drills and they're all clipped on there just a little bit. It doesn't have to be the full 8 minutes or 10 minutes of a drill. But that way, again, there's clarity before we hold them accountable to it. And so on their app, they all have all the drills in alphabetical order and they get a practice plan ahead of time and they can go hop on there and see, oh, this looks new. I've never seen this on the practice plan yet. Again, for a new kid to the program, everything's going to be new. But that way, one, it gives them confidence coming into practice. There's less of a fear of, I'm going to get yelled at, I'm going to mess up, because at least they've visually seen it. Now, some kids obviously have to do it to perform it well. They have to go through it to perform it well, or they have to write it down. But this at least took away one of those steps, right? That they could feel more confident coming into practice, knowing the drills ahead of time, that they could see how it was done from previous teams and the people who came before them. And this is what it should look like. And so that was the idea behind that. And I think it's given us a lot of success that they're prepared for practice in that way.
I wanted to bring it up because I think a lot of times we think about sending players like clips from games and not necessarily the drill that we're doing in practice. And if they learn the drill better, then they spend less time mentally on that drill, then they're focused more on the tactic or technique that you're trying to get from the drill. So I love the concept and I love the idea in terms of that. What are some other things that you're sending on film?
We send a lot of things on film. I think in terms of their app, that's probably it that is in preloaded in there, right? So they can look up every drill that they do. We record every practice at seven different angles. All of our practices immediately get uploaded. We use the Huddle platform, so they get uploaded immediately to Huddle, and they can go back and watch practice again at seven different angles. We will then clip as a coaching staff, depending on the day, depending on the focus, depending on the priority, we will clip and they can just immediately watch that as a playlist. And so that's the stage we're at right now in the preseason time. Once we get into season, there'll be opponent clips, offensive and defensive playlists for scouting and all those different types of things. We will also get into a stage where we do individual player clips on our own team in practice. So we're actually going to start this November 1st. So we have our start, stop, and keep. We have that as a team right now. So it's just kind of things to keep them focused. So let's start doing this. Let's stop doing this. Let's keep doing this. And we're going to start doing that individually with them as well. We already have it planned out. And then there can be film and different things that go with that so they can see if they're on the right path for that.
I love that. I love hearing about that. Talk to us then. Obviously, you mentioned you had some turnover in your roster this year, and obviously, you've had unique rosters throughout your time there. How do you decide tactically what to do? Are you consistent from year to year with what you're doing, or do you adapt it relative to your personnel?
Yeah, adapt it relative to the personnel. I will say we are consistent in certain philosophies. I like to play half court man-to-man defense. I like to do this against ball screens specifically. We like to run a lot of sets on offense with freedom. Our transition offense has been the same since 2019, 2018, 2017, actually. So there are some consistencies. But the sets that we run are always based on who we have, what we got, what are our strengths, what are our limiters. And so we adapt per team and what we have going on. Like I said, I am strictly half court man to man, but if we can't do it, we'll play zone. And that hasn't really been the case, but we will play maybe more zone than we would man if we feel the need. So yes, very adaptable based on our personnel. And again, we want to look the best and we want to make the kids look the best of what they got as well. Let's expose their strengths, not expose their limiters, and limit the limiters for sure.
Love it. And take us a little deeper through this phrasing, sets with freedom. I think that's an important point.
Yeah, sets with freedom. I just think one of my personal strengths as a coach is offense and mismatches and finding how to again expose our strengths, raise those level of strengths, and use our players' skills to the best of their abilities. And so I kind of sculpt and mold the offensive sets to that, right? Whether that's making things up on my own, finding things, and then tweaking them for our own program. But within that has to be levels of freedom and levels of playing basketball. So for us specifically, that really more so comes in transition. So there we have our routes that we run, but then there's freedom in decision making, freedom in playing. Here's the stencil. Now you guys have to play basketball and make decisions from it. The sets are a little bit different because here's the stencil. This is what we want. Option one, two, three, four. Now, if we can't get that, all of that, we're playing basketball. So I think it's important to have both for sure. We're probably a little bit more structured than somebody who would say they give kids freedom, a little more structured in that regard, a little more stenciled in that regard. But that's the goal, is that they feel free playing, but they know that there's structure behind it.
The fly fast break, some Sierra Canyon slang. So animals for the positions, right?
Yeah, birds specifically.
Birds specifically. Okay, take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, so the idea originated, but then ultimately grew from Mike Neighbors, who's very smart at all these types of categories. And
Rabbits and all the other things he's got
yeah, I
going.
think he's fantastic. So I had already had the fly system, is what we called it. And then having heard him and some of his names, decided to really go all in on the bird theme. So fly is just our name of our offensive transition. And we want to fly down the court as fast as possible. And then again, that's really it has stuck in the last 7 or so years, but that kind of grew from Mike's idea of transition. So because we are in the fly theme, name them birds. So our Raven is our point guard. They're the person who has the ball, makes the decisions. Raven is supposed to be one of the smartest birds and can oversee everything and really make those decisions well. We called it Eagle originally, but you run to the nest. So the eagle would really, at the time, it was eagles were bigs, and that's the one thing that has changed, because anybody can run to the nest. So the nest is our rim runner, and that's who we want to get. Whoever gets down the court first, you can run to the rim. If you're 5'2" or you're 6'5", it doesn't matter. If you're down the court first, we fill the nest spot first. And then our corners are our falcons. This one came a long time ago. So the peregrine falcon, if I say that, is the fastest mammal on earth when it's in its dive motion. It can go to whatever, 200 miles per hour. And so we say our falcons really need to get down the floor. So they sprint to the corners. And then our hawk is a delayed trail. And so the hawks over everything, they oversee things. And then we go hawk action is when it reverses to the hawk. So again, imagery, things that stick with a kid's mind. It's not just, hey, sprint down the floor. I explain just once, the peregrine falcon is the fastest mammal on earth, and you better start running like a falcon and get to that spot. So it gives them a little more imagery, vision behind it, and understanding of this is why it's called this, and this is why you do it. And it makes it a little more fun too.
I told coaches that you're great with language and they're getting a feel for that now and really cool stick with itness type of language. Another thing I wanted to bring up is this concept of kind of you understanding that the years of progression, it's not everything doesn't have to be coached right away. An example would be, say, shot selection at the beginning of the year. You're giving a lot of individual freedom in the sense that you're not going to overcoach things early. You're going to almost give them chances to explore first. So take us through that process a little bit.
Yeah, I think the stages of a basketball team are really important, right? And so we are, as a basketball team, just like we would seasons of normal life, right? So we have fall, winter, spring, and summer. And so we are in different seasons as those seasons come and go. So right now we're in our fall season. I call it our preseason time. So we aren't practicing 5, 6 days a week. We don't go for 2.5 hours every single day. So again, a lot of intentionality behind my personal philosophies and why we do that and the things we do. But with that is in the fall time, like they just came off of summer, and their goals in the summer are individual improvement. That's all I care about in the summertime. We don't talk team basketball. We barely compete in anything. It's you need to get better at whatever it is that you need to get better at. And if they did that and they put effort in behind that, how else can they show me that if I'm putting in my offense right now and telling them the shots they can and can't take and only talking about defense, whatever it might be? How can they possibly demonstrate to me that they did improve in those areas? How can they get confidence on the basketball court if they are now being shut down to what we do? And we're in that stage of life right now. And we're starting to transition now into winter, which would then be our season time, right? So there will be, now you have to do what it is that we do. But in that time, I can see, did my 6'5 kid develop a 3-point shot? Oh my gosh, he's a phenomenal 3-point shooter. I can add into our offense high-low stuff, or she's the person at the high now. She used to just have to be the person at the low, right? Or whatever it may be. So there's an adaptability that comes with me seeing their level of personal progression and then how I can change that into our offenses and defenses and the things that we're doing. So a big thing for us is we do play in a fall league and we have played in more events this year than we have in the past. And I don't coach them in those things. I let them, we sub them. That's what I say. I sub you, I don't coach you. Because explore, find out. If you've been working on shooting mid-range shots because all you could ever do before was drive, show me that you can shoot mid-range shots. And there's a level of freedom there, right? There's a level of confidence there. And if they feel okay to explore in that environment, they're way more likely to do it and then obviously to get better. Very, again, intentional in our seasons of play in our team.
No, I love the example and the connection to seasons, and it's a long season, as when everyone knows. So it's a great perspective at looking at it that way. We've covered culture, we've covered tactics a little bit. Take us a little bit deeper, maybe in terms of, we talked about offensive tactics. Take us into defensive tactics a little bit, especially again, the prevalence of ball screen clearly within the game nowadays. And take us through a little bit about how you're developing ball screen defense and defensive understanding.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that stayed a little more consistent for us and even goes back to the time of who I played for and the principles and stuff that I knew and I grew up with, right? I would imagine if I played a zone defense my entire life that I would probably coach in a zone, but I played a man-to-man defense my entire life. And the one thing that has changed for me is I was always on a pressing team. So I grew up pressing a lot. And that's one thing that I don't do. And one of my kind of philosophies behind that is you can bully the bad teams and the mediocre teams. Again, if we're talking about like the elite level, and you can press on them and steal and score and steal and score. But when you get to good teams, and again, the elite teams, the national ranked teams, you're going against really good coaches, you're going against really good players. And personally, I think a simple press break can beat a lot. And I just don't want to spend a lot of time on pressing a team if we're going to have to take it off when we get to a championship game and play a half court defense. So we might as well be really good at what we do. And so that's why for us, it's been strictly a lot of half court man to man. We do a couple of trapping defenses. We will play a zone and we have some unique zones that some of my assistant coaches have brought to the table. But it's important, of course, to know what you do and what's best for you and what's best game to game. We're a big team that also changes depending on what the opponents do. So I think that's a little bit unique. Sometimes people are like, this is what we do, and then we will do it. And if we lose because of it, like that's who we are. We won't do that. We will adjust. We're always going to give ourselves the best chance to win a basketball game based on our preparation of scout. And then specifically talking about ball screens, we have all the coverages. So we will go over and get through and go under and get through. We will go and drop coverage. We will trap. We will switch. We do all of it. But we do have like our primary, and those are in colors. So we have our primary defenses that we like to do in colors. And again, if it's not working, and based on our preparation of scout, it's not something we think we'll be successful in for that game, then we will go to a different coverage. But a lot of times I actually find that teams who run a lot of ball screens won't ball screen against us because they just know we're prepared for it and we like to take away a team's strength. Ultimately, that's it. It's more simple for me than it is for offense because offense, we have to go with our personnel a little bit more. And what do we have this year? Do I have a 6'5 kid? Do I have a bunch of 5'7 kids? Do I have a true point guard? Do I have a shooter who can do that? What do we look like? Whereas defensively, this is what we're going to try to do. And then if we just are falling short of that based on whatever it is, then we'll adjust a little bit.
Two things stand out from that answer. One is obviously you're starting so much of a season with the end in mind. It's okay, sure, this will work against the bad teams, but what is going to work against the good teams? The second thing, and the reason I asked you about ball screen defense, is I'm curious, do you feel a certain responsibility within your coaching, not just to succeed, obviously, for yourself and your players in Syracuse, but to develop these players for their future possibilities as well. And that's one of the reasons you do cover so many ball screen defenses, is because you don't know what they're going to end up doing in AAU or beyond.
Correct. And also a big reason personally why I don't play as much zone as some other teams might play zone, because I'm trying to prepare them for the next level. And some people, of course, that's their main staple of the defense and that's all they know. But we were trying to make these players as well-rounded as possible to go to the next level, right? And give them as much verbiage that might be used at all the different programs and show them different looks. It's also good for us offensively, right? To go against multiple defenses, whether that's the base defense or how you're guarding the ball screen or how you're just getting through normal screens. And so we mix it up as much as possible to help us on the offensive end, but then also that we can then hopefully have plan A, B, C, and D when it comes to a game where it's necessary to mix it up.
Talk to us personally about some of your goals. I know probably coaching in Hoop Summit was one of those really cool moments for you, getting that opportunity to be able to coach there. What are some other things on the list of things that Alicia wants to do in her future in coaching?
Yeah, I've been pretty darn fortunate, Chris. I think I've done a lot of the things. I was never just me as a person. I was never big on setting. I don't have a bucket list of things in life as a person. I don't have a big list of goals, but for sure, coaching for USA Basketball is on there. And that's at any level, like winning a gold medal is definitely on there. So that's number one, probably. It's obviously a huge honor to represent your country. It's a huge honor to represent basketball at the highest level, which I think USA Basketball is. And then not a lot of people can say they win a gold medal. So you can win a state championship, you can win a district championship. People win national championships too, but I think to win a gold medal is for a small few. So that is really probably it for me, to be honest. And other than that, it's the daily goals of just impact as many lives as humanly possible in the time that I have coaching and the time that I have on this earth. And that's the most important thing for me.
You've done that because I've had a chance to interact with some of your current and your former players, and everyone comes back to Sierra Canyon with such a positive outlook on the experience and the possibilities and the opportunities and all the different things that come with it. And no doubt that's a big part of it too. But just as we wrap up, maybe talk to us a little bit about balancing some of the things. Because again, least people think you're not a full-time basketball coach. You're also balancing being an athletic director, obviously being all these other things that exist in your life. So talk to us about that balance, because running an elite high school program now is probably completely different than when you did it 13 years ago.
Oh, for sure. 13 years ago, we weren't an elite program. We were just
Yet.
starting.
Good point.
Yeah. And again, I think that's something that's come with my maturity and my growth and my age just as a person is what's important to me. When I started, I was young, I was single. It was a whole different life than where I am at my stage of life now. And again, what's important? I want a good marriage. And so, not bringing the wins home and the losses home and all the film home and spending time like with my husband is important, right? And so it's just prioritizing. My relationships are important, not just the one with my husband. My relationships are important. So if all I'm doing is basketball 100% of the time, nonstop, something else in life is suffering, right? And my relationship with God is most important. And so if I'm doing film and I don't do what it's important for me to attend church on Sunday and to get into the word and do all the things that are important for me, then something again is falling short. And so balance is the key word, but I think it's prioritizing and then you can balance after that. Because for some people, it's only two things are important. Two things need to be prioritized. And for some people, it's 10 things. And that obviously makes things a lot harder. But I think it's just, again, who am I? What's important to me? And what do I want to make sure stays important in my life? And I think that's all what really ultimately sets me up for success. But it's also just who I am. I'm wired a different way. I'm very organized. And so some things are a lot easier to balance because of how meticulous I am on certain things and how alpha I am on certain things. But then I can let a lot of things go. And I think, again, that's probably one of my biggest growth as a coach is bringing less home. Not staying up till midnight watching film and trying to improve this offense and this defense. And like, I can let more things go. But I think a lot of that also comes with the people I surround myself with. So, my coaching staff, I give them a lot of credit because I don't do this by myself. And so, if I didn't have great coaches around me, it would be a lot harder. But that's intentional as well. And so, finding people, because this is a team, and finding people who want to put in the work, do it the right way, and do it well. It makes it easier on me, especially again as I continue on the upward trajectory of age and slow down a little bit. So just a lot of trust, I think, is the biggest thing. But balance is hard, and I think it's really hard when you're a young coach. It's harder when you're a young coach. And then it gets a little harder too when you have a family and you have other prioritizations. Just figuring it out because everybody's different for sure. And my path is not everybody's path. Again, authenticity and stay true to who you are. And that's all I can say about that. Yeah.
I'm so appreciative of you sharing your perspectives and your insights and all your knowledge and from your program and everything else. And personally, I can't thank you enough for everything that you've done for me and my family as well. I'm very grateful for you and Sierra Canyon and the experience as well. And I know you're the reason for that. So thank you. And on behalf of the audience, thank you for sharing the game. Absolutely amazing to have you on, Alicia.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Chris. Keep doing what you're doing.